What's up, NBA fans? We're at around 15, 16-ish games left in the NBA season, so we're really hitting the home stretch here, the final runway before we head into the playoffs, and a lot of movement in the Western Conference standings, and a lack of movement in the Eastern Conference standings, with the Celtics still holding on to that top spot, whereas in the West, the Nuggets have now surged to the first spot, Timberwolves at third, and a few steady holders in the Clippers and Pelicans in the middle, and those in the bottom half, Kings, Mavericks, Suns, Lakers, and Warriors continue to go at one another. Kings with a huge win over the Lakers to push themselves to the sixth seed. And the Lakers just got to figure it out if they want to get out of that play-in zone. But we'll be breaking all that and that and more. But we have to start here with the Nuggets, Sean, because this team has been on a tear. Jokic has been on a tear, and it feels like not long ago, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about there being a head-to-head MVP match between SGA and Jokic, but it sort of feels like Jokic has maybe heard the chatters and, you know, has really found his way back to the top of the list and put together a dominating performance against the Celtics, which was a huge game for any NBA fan who's been keeping up. This year, Jokic going 32-11-12 and getting that win against the Celtics. But what do you think, Sean? Or does SGA still have a chance, or is Jokic sealed it and is about to be joined the elusive club of players who have won three or more MVPs?
Sadly for SGA, Allen, I'm going to have to side with Jokic on this one. The guy's just been playing way too well for us to let SGA's foot in the door. He's still been playing super well. I mean, the guy's averages over 30 points a game, consistently gets 31 points a game, more than any other player probably ever has. But just the way that the Nuggets been playing, the way that they've, I mean, gotten all the way up to the one seed, tying the Thunder tonight, even when the Thunder are playing as well as they have been, the Nuggets still were able to catch them and getting huge wins over obvious championship contenders like the Celtics. Putting Celtics media into disarray, really. that win over the Celtics was absolutely crushing for Celtics media. Like, they were calling the Nuggets insurmountable. That was directly what they were talking about. Like, we cannot beat this team. Like, they had given up on their team already, which, you know, hyperbole or not, I might call it a little bit of hyperbole, but it just goes to show that, like, when this Nuggets team is on, like, it just seems like they are unbeatable. Like, they have all of the pieces necessary, Jokic being obviously the biggest one of those. So if they stay healthy, I think a lot of teams are just, they're not going to be able to figure out how to beat this team. And it's going to be wide open in the West. I mean, we're talking about the Lakers being all the way down at the 10 seed, but they've been playing super well too. A lot of these teams are going to beat each other up, but ultimately it's hard to envision which team has the size, has the strength, has the basketball IQ to match up to this team right now.
Yeah, I feel like I've watched the few times, I feel like in the last few weeks, it's been teams have been gearing up for the Nuggets, namely like Boston, the Lakers, and Miami as well, who's played them twice in the last month. I feel like all those games that I've seen, it's pretty clear that the teams are gearing up to test themselves against the Nuggets. And the Nuggets are feeling that, and they've responded well in getting wins in all of those games, including that Laker win where the Lakers were matching them punch for punch, and then it just felt like the Nuggets just switched to another gear in that fourth quarter and went into, you know, their motions, and the Lakers just could not respond, and the Nuggets just built their lead and walked away with the W. This team is, yeah, it's scary, and I think we've known it the whole time. It was kind of even I think all of us who watched the NBA pretty avidly, we saw them lingering in the third seed, but we knew it was only a matter of time before they turned it on, and they did, and here they are. And Jokic is at his season average now. Averages are now 26, 12, and 9 assists for the season. Pretty close to a triple-double season. I don't know if he'll actually get to it nor he really cares, but
definitely doesn't care.
Yeah, but I mean, the list of players that he joined, of players who have won three or more MVPs, LeBron James, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Jordan, Moses Malone, Bill Russell, Will Chamberlain is quite the elite club here, and
the pantheon of basketball right there.
Exactly. And I think when it comes to the GOAT debate, these are names that I don't think Moses Malone usually gets the respect.
Yeah, probably not as much, but he was a great player.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, the rest of them are arguably GOATs in their own respect. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's Jokic, and it's kind of funny to just kind of realize that and almost feel like it doesn't get talked about enough that we're witnessing right now a guy at his peak who should be considered one of the GOATs, I think, based on his, you know, his basketball, his body of work he's done together.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see, once it's all said and done with Jokic's career, like, where do we rank him amongst the top? I think top 10 is almost a given.
Yep.
Who gets kicked out of that list is going to be obviously another debate too, because, yeah, I feel like even at this point, you could argue that he's already a top 10 player, even with still a lot of good years left in his career to offer us, to add to his legacy. And it's just, man, it's so interesting because this is third, like, I don't know this off the top of my head. How many have won four MVPs? How many people of this list?
LeBron, Michael, Russell, and that's who I know. I'm not sure if Magic Johnson won four, and I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't think Moses Malone won four.
Yeah, the list gets very thin, needless to say. And then you're talking about literal GOATs, right?
Yeah.
Like, the only people that have done this. And so, yeah, you look at this and you're like, holy cow, like, could this guy actually win four MVPs? Because I feel like this year's almost a given at this point. Like, he'd have to like actually injure himself like today for that not to happen. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of who would take the MVP from him next year. Well, like, if he keeps doing this, like, who's gonna get it from him? I don't know if Wemby's ready for that yet. Maybe Luka. But, like, he's already been playing so well, and we're not even talking about Luka outside of maybe a top three conversation at best.
Yeah, exactly. And this Nuggets team is poised to stick together next year, barring any bad injury or, I guess, team fallout. But the contracts are in place, and the ages are still lined up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Jokic is 28, and Murray's 27. Michael Porter's a few years behind them. And, I mean, Aaron Gordon, I don't think is seeing.
I think he's around there too, yeah.
Yeah. So it's tough to say. Unless Luka can come out of the gates with a better team next year that could challenge for that one seed, it's just tough to not give it to Jokic now that he's standing at that one seed, and the Denver Nuggets look like more so the favorite all of a sudden than the Boston Celtics, who have held on to that power ranking number one spot for quite most of this season.
Yeah.
Another name that I forgot to add to this list, which I feel kind of really dumb about it, is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who has the most MVPs won in NBA history at six. Yep. So,
oh man, six! Holy cow!
So we can't count this man out. Obviously, he's in many eyes, to many people, he is the GOAT, rightfully so. So, but yeah, I mean, Jokic, top 10 territory, I think, is there, especially if he gets this MVP and he closes it off with an NBA title, I think, which is kind of crazy because it feels like we haven't had those conversations of what winning the NBA title would mean for a certain player's legacy, unless that player has been Durant, LeBron, or Curry in the last few years. I feel like we have not added another name to that list, but Jokic is maybe is that guy. We got to kind of start thinking about that way, because he's won the title already. He's won the MVPs, scoring titles, and has had the title of best player in the league. But now we're talking about long-term legacy.
Right. Which obviously he doesn't care about at all, especially not compared to guys like LeBron and Steph.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. Cause we're already talking, like, if he retired after this year to just go, you know, have fun with his horses, he would, I think, still be considered a top 10 player in his career, like in the history of the NBA, like with the career he's had so far. You win three MVPs, you won a championship. Like, I think that puts you there.
Yeah. But does he care to move up any further? Like, does he want the,
oh, he doesn't
the
care.
Five NBA titles? Like, that'd be crazy if he,
he cares about getting the title. Like, he wants to win the championship. I don't think he wants to do it for his legacy though. I think he wants to do it because it's his job. His job is to win the title, and so he's going to go try to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he cares about that, but does he think about wanting to win the title 3 years from now, 4 years from now, you know, to try to get to like,
yeah, five? I don't think so. I mean, he seems like a very grounded person. He just kind of looks at what's ahead of him, you know, because you can't look at titles 3, 4, and 5 without getting 2.
Yeah.
I think that was LeBron's mistake when he was in Miami, is he is thinking he's going to get 5 championships there. He didn't even get the 1 when he said that. So, yeah, I think that Jokic, he could easily win multiple titles. This team is just so solid across the board. They have all of the playoff experience. We know Jamal Murray's going to show up for the big moments. It seems like the whole team really shows up for the big moments, too. And even Michael Porter Jr. getting more development this year as the young guy, and he's really shown up this year, playing really well. Yeah, I mean, there's only so many ways you can look at it without being like, man, like, they have to be the favorite. Even with Boston having a great year, only have like, what, 14 losses on the season. But that head-to-head matchup, I think that definitely clinched what the Vegas odds would be for a Nuggets-Celtics matchup.
Yeah, the Celtics don't have what basically anybody in the league really has. It's just someone with the agility and IQ, size, to go one-on-one against Jokic down low. I don't know, maybe a Bucks Nuggets would be a better matchup there.
Brooke Lopez, you think could size him up a bit?
Yeah, you rotate between Brooke Lopez and throw Giannis in there. I think that's the matchup. I would love to see Giannis versus Jokic in the final.
That would be pretty awesome, yeah.
I just don't know if the Bucks can get there, but
They're looking better. I like their chances as much as anybody outside the Celtics, I'd say. Like, I think Celtics-Bucks Eastern Conference Finals seems more likely than anything at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Looking further out to the schedule for the Nuggets, I mean, it's looking pretty weak now, and I'm almost safe to say that the Nuggets are going to walk away with the number one seed unless they really throw a blunder and lose against the Trailblazers, because toughest matchups they got is they got the Timberwolves in next week. They got the Suns and the Cavs, and then they got the Timberwolves again. But outside of that, there's a lot of Spurs, a lot of Grizzlies in this schedule still left for them.
And you could argue those Timberwolves games aren't as hard as they would have been if Cat was healthy. So those might also not be as hard of matchups as they look on paper. So
yeah,
it's looking pretty nice for them. I think the Thunder, they don't have a bad schedule necessarily, but it's going to be interesting to see who gets that one seed. I think they'll both be fighting till the very end to get it.
Yeah. Yep. We'll check it out. Go flip it on the other side. Let's go to the other. Yeah, because we haven't talked about this. And apparently, well, Mark was saying last week that there is a social media tracker type of community that's been tracking this. But the Pistons versus the Wizards dynamic has been one of the wildest storylines this season, just because the Pistons were on such an awful pace, but have somehow hit a little spurt here to win enough. And the Wizards have hit a huge pitfall. That all of a sudden it's the Wizards that are the worst team in the NBA, and the Pistons have managed to jump them now, and they're 12-53, and the Wizards are 11-55 at 16% Dang. Win percentage.
Kyle Kuzma, man, all the karma comes back to him tweeting out, poking fun at the Pistons, and now look where you're at. You're the ones behind them in the standings, and the Pistons won 2 games in a row now, their first win streak of the year, which that I don't think anyone saw that coming. Like, Cade Cunningham's playing pretty well. Jalen Duren looks super good. And this guy, Simone Fontecchio, who we just found out about like a few weeks ago, is somehow just balling for this team. They got some James Wiseman. Can we talk about James Wiseman actually kind of like revitalizing his career a bit?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I was looking up the Bobcats record because I wanted to remind myself.
No, they won like 9 games. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they won 9. But it was also a short season because it was the lockout season.
Yes, that's why I'm looking at the win percentage, and the win percentage was 10%.
Oh, yeah. No, they've vaulted over that way over that.
I really wanted them to get to it, but
yeah, they were on pace for a while.
Yeah, but I mean, the Pistons are just throwing bodies out there at this point. And like, yeah, I mean, I feel it's awesome to see James Wiseman out there, but yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what to think of it when a team is this bad. I mean, Cade Cunningham is throwing together some good performances. I think that's yeah. probably
well. It's got to be a moral. It's a moral win for this team to get out of that last place, because there's no pride in being last place anymore. Because at least before, you could be like, oh, at least we got the best lottery odds. It's like, no, the bottom three teams have the same lottery odds. So you being last just means you suck the most.
Yeah, so, exactly.
The fact that the Pistons have actually passed the Wizards is a pretty big deal for them. Like, that's got to be at least a good moral victory. And to add a little drama to these ingredients here, they're both slated to play each other the last day of March, I believe, will likely determine who really is the worst team in the league. And yeah, you know March they're going to show up for that one.
Yeah, this needs to be on primetime ABC. The worst team in the league. The showdown. That might decide it right there and then. I mean, the Pistons still they play against the Grizzlies two more times after that and the Spurs, but I mean, I guess it's not, you know, it's not guaranteed whether they can win those games.
Oh, I mean, none of their games are guaranteed. Every game is a tough fought win for these teams. So
ooh. Yeah, I just peeked at the Wizards schedule and oh,
not looking good.
No, they still have the Bucks. They still have the Timberwolves. They have the Lakers, the Celtics. Who else did they got here? They got that scrappy Raptors team, but like,
yeah, no, those Raptors team's not scrappy anymore.
Yeah, and they have the Miami Heat too. So Miami, Bucks, Lakers, and Celtics are definitely going to come out, you know, not wanting to take that loss against this team.
Oh yeah, no, that's everyone's circling that as an easy win, as they should. But man, the Wizards look just so bad. It's it's sad to see, but I mean, especially in a draft that's gonna be so bad too. Like, these teams are gonna get high picks and they're just gonna get role players.
Yeah, but on the note of the Wizards, because we were just talking about this guy before we you know, hopped on, is Jordan Poole. Because we got a set of guys here that we're asking ourselves, you know, are they back? Is there a resurgence here for some of these guys? And Jordan Poole is one of these dudes who, like, as soon as he went to the bench, we said it was sort of Mark said it was a big deal. We both said it was kind of forgetful, but it kind of might have ended up being a big deal for Jordan Poole personally, because he has had quite the resurgence here. A few 30-point games on the 25th against Cleveland, another 30-point game against the Lakers, and a 32-point game against Utah. Oh, and that game against Utah at 61% shooting. Wow. And let me see. Since in the month of March, 17 points a game, 90% free throw shooting, 45 from the field. Not bad for Jordan Poole. A lot better than where
not
he
good,
was at.
Like, yeah, compared to the average, but yeah, he was averaging like 40% field goal shooting for January and February. So and then like 30% from three. So the fact that he was able to get up to like 46% shooting and 36% from three, that's an NBA player right there. Yep, you got something there.
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising you hit the dot, but yes, his season average is still 40% from the field and 31% from three.
So, well, this month will hopefully bring that up if he keeps playing like this. But yeah, do you think he's back, or is this just like a 2-week hot streak?
I think this has sent him a message, and I think he's got the flames under his feet, and I think he's got people around him telling, "Yo, man, the ride might be over if you don't put something together the next few weeks." And I think he might have screwed his head on a little tighter this last month and is actually going out there and trying to play some respectable basketball.
If he had been doing this all season, like, no one would be giving him crap. Like, oh, you know, it's a little disappointing, but yeah, you know, he's all right. But yeah, the fact that he's done it for just 2 weeks here after such an abysmal season, we're actually like thinking like it's exciting, unfortunately. But Yeah, no, I think, yeah, if he can go back to being a six-man type of guy, maybe that's just his role in the league, and tried the starter thing, and it wasn't going to work out.
Yeah, I mean, he could play this contract off one more year and then potentially get traded to an actual contender and be like come off the bench type of role.
Exactly.
Other guy, Zion, man. We have not talked about Zion all year. He has been very underwhelming, but
decent.
But decent, yes. He has not been like Ben Simmons underwhelming. He's still slightly above average NBA player, but definitely far from all-star selection or, you know, even coming close to an all-NBA selection. But the thing about Zion, though, is he's been doing just enough to keep this very low-key Pelicans team holding on to that fifth seed, 39-26, 6-4 over the last 10. And they're hanging on to that fifth seed. They're getting themselves set up for a matchup against a Clippers team that has had the injury bug hit them recently with Russell Westbrook. James Harden is missing some time and potentially questions with Kawhi with that back spasm that caused him to leave the game yesterday. Although he did play today, so maybe that's not a big enough issue. But that might be the matchup the Pelicans could actually set the road for them to make it into the second round and give Zion just enough time to get in, continue his process of getting into better shape through the season.
Right. Yeah, it seems like it's working out. And yeah, that Clippers matchup is going to be very interesting. I feel like both of those teams are pretty locked into the 4 and the 5 seed right now. Mm-hmm. It's a very likely that they're going to play each other in the first round. And as a Clippers fan, I'd be scared of this matchup for us because the Pelicans have really good defense. They have a lot of guys that they can switch around on you. And obviously with Zion, and we've never really seen him play playoff basketball. Maybe you could consider the in-season tournament as like a taste of it, and we didn't really get that much from him. But maybe it's not really the same, and the playoffs are going to bring up the beast again that we saw his sophomore year when he was averaging 27-12 and made the All-Star team that year. Maybe we'll see that Zion come back when push comes to shove. But I think really the biggest thing is that he's on the floor and he's playing more often than not, and I think that's just great for NBA.
Yeah, exactly. Zion has so far played 55 games, and he's on pace to match or surpass the season where he played the most, which was only 61 games during that sophomore year when he was, when you said, Sean, 27 points a game and shooting an absurd like 65% from the field, like just a big boy getting himself to the basket. hopefully we see that athleticism from Zion. Yet again, he's had a few 30-point games, also some 30-point games this month. To help the Pelicans stick to that fifth seed. But a big deal or forgetful here, another name here of a guy who I was hoping would have a resurgence this season. And I thought there was an opportunity. But Ben Simmons undergoing another procedure for his back and out for the rest of the season.
Ugh.
Big deal or forgetful here, Sean. What are you thinking?
I guess it depends on if you care about Ben Simmons anymore. If you do, it's a big deal because this might mean he never plays an NBA game ever again. For I think a lot of the rest of us, it's forgetful in that we kind of lost faith in Ben Simmons years ago, and this is just, you know, no different than what we've experienced. So is it really going to affect anything? No. It's a bummer, but I mean, we've kind of seen this coming. He looked good to start the season. We're like, oh, okay, like he's playing. He played like the first 5-6 games of the season, and then back to good old Ben Simmons. So yeah, it's just his body just can't cash the checks. It sucks.
Yeah, well, his body can't, but his bank account sure is, because he still has $37 million owed to him and $40 million owed to him next year.
Unreal.
So a big deal.
What a terrible contract.
Joe Tsai. Poor ownership who still has to cash out the guaranteed contract of Ben Simmons. But here's a big one, though, I think. Carl Anthony Towns out with a meniscus tear, out for at least a regular season, potentially longer. Six to eight weeks, I think, is the tentative timeline. But
yeah,
this is a big injury at a big time of the year. Obviously, like the Timberwolves have already lost the number one seed since Towns went down, and they're down to three. They did get that big win against the Clippers, where it sort of felt like that might have been a turning point. If they put they lose that game, you know, they're setting themselves off to potentially fall out of the third seed, or at least get within hunting territory for the Clippers to get them and jump a seed. But they get that win, so they live to see another day. However, this has to be a big deal for the Timberwolves. I mean, this was a huge season for them. They made that big trade for Gobert, and it looked like this was the year they were going to cash out on the benefits of it. And for Towns to go, he's a huge piece of that puzzle. So for him to go down, and then they face one of these, you know, scrappy hot teams in the West, like, there's no guarantees you're going to walk away with a playoff win there.
Yeah, this was such a big deal because of the way that the Timberwolves offense runs. Yep. You really only have two options. You have Anthony Edwards or you have Karl-Anthony Towns. Nobody else on this team, nobody can create a shot for themselves or create shots for others very effectively if they don't have other people that can score. Yeah. Like, so far we've seen them try Naz Reid in the starting lineup. And I guess in a way he can score, but it's just isn't the full complete player that Karl-Anthony Towns is. So you lose a little bit on both ends. And so then they tried to go with just more a defensive minded team. And so they put in Kyle Anderson in that starting lineup instead of Karl-Anthony Towns, instead of Naz Reid. And you just completely lose your offense when you do that, because Kyle Anderson's good for about 8 points a game. So it just puts so much load on Anthony Edwards now to just carry this team. And maybe he can do that for the rest of the regular season, and maybe they can hold on to that three seed. But, I mean, we're talking about a meniscus tear. Like, this is no minor injury. And even when if he is able to somehow come back for this first round of the playoffs, like, he just got a meniscus tear. Like, he's not going to be fully healthy and ready to go. And you're going to be going up against a hungry either Sacramento Kings, Phoenix Suns, Dallas Mavericks team, most likely, that is fully healthy right now and is ready to roll. Like, the Suns have their big three back right now. Like, you're telling me that these Wolves are going to have to go up against the Suns in the first round as the apparent home field advantage team? Like, this is a huge deal. It sucks for the Wolves.
Yeah, it really does. And one call out from here too is, like, that's a good point to the offense versus defense thing. Is this team went out and got a guy like Gobert and has these long wings like a Jaden McDaniels because they built this team to let Edwards and Towns do their thing and not have to anchor the defense for this team. So they went and got these guys who are so defensive minded. So yes, you lose that second offensive piece. It throws the whole ecosystem for this team. And they found some nuggets in Nikhil Alexander-Walker having 28 points in that game against the Clippers, also kind of resurging his NBA career there a little bit. And I mean, if there's a sign of desperation, it was also going out there and signing TJ Warren, who hasn't played a single NBA game this year.
I forgot about that guy.
But they went and got this guy last week. And I mean, I don't know what else he's done, but the box score from yesterday from the Clipper game is 14 minutes and 2 points. So
lot of nothing.
Yeah. No miracle there, but I mean, it is just a sign, right? That, like, they're desperate for offense. Straws. Yeah.
Maybe they can pick up Isaiah Thomas. I hear he's trying to make a return still.
Yeah. I think he's playing in the G League right now. He might be.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah. He's in the G League right now. I think he got like 32 points in a game the other day. Which, you know, that's pretty good.
There you go. I mean, hey, if there's a team that has the defense to experiment with something like that, it's the Timberwolves, who have now moved toward the number one defensive team in the league. I don't believe they've been holding that position all year, but they must have made that move recently, since I have not looked at those in a while.
I think their defense has been good. I don't think it was number one, though, but they must have been pretty close if they have got there without just a few games of Cat being out.
Yeah, exactly. The other one is a favorite of the podcast is Offering Sagoon out for the rest of the season with a grade 3 ankle sprain, bone bruise. Although the moment it happened looked much worse than this injury. Man. It looked like a straight tear was in line for him.
It was painful to watch. Yeah, I thought it could have even been like an ankle fracture with the way that it bent. And Yeah, I was looking up. I was doing an unhealthy amount of research into what could possibly have happened to Sengun when this happened, and I was just desperate for information. It looked like, yeah, the most likely thing did happen. Like, he avoided complete ligament damage to his knee, which is a huge deal. Like, he didn't tear any of the LCL or the MCL or the ACL. Lucky to come out with just a bone bruise there. And a grade 3 ankle sprain, it doesn't sound bad, but that's pretty much a fracture. Mm-hmm. Like, it's gonna take him probably 8 weeks to recover from that. And obviously that ends his season, but I don't think Houston really had any chance of making the playoffs anyway, so it's probably for the best. Yeah. But yeah, it's actually fortunate news. Yeah, like you're saying, based on what we saw and how bad it could have been, like, he will be able to get in a full offseason regimen, and he will be able to come back at the beginning of next season fully healthy. So great season for this kid, man. Just 21 years old. He really became the focal point of this team's offense. He became a mini Sabonis, and
yeah,
ironically was taken out by Sabonis. great future for this kid, man. I'm glad he avoided serious injury.
Yeah, and I think I feel pretty proud that in this podcast we've always been saying that Sengun should have been the focal point since 2021.
Yes.
When they had that Jalen Green, KPG, Christian Wood trio just chucking up shots, ignoring the big guy in the middle.
We knew Sengun had the talent. We knew he could be this, and it took Ime Udoka, an actual competent coach there, to unlock it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, hell of a season for this guy. He's solidifying himself as the number one option, essentially, for this team. I guess like him and Fred VanVleet, but
he'll be an all-star in either the next year or the year after. Like, he's gotten so good so quickly.
Here's a funny one. Otto Porter Jr. officially retiring from basketball. Big deal of Forgetful. I mean, you know, I could easily say Forgetful, but I kind of want to say big deal just because Otto Porter Jr. to me will always remind me of an era in the NBA where teams were just throwing big contracts at players that showed some flash.
Yeah, one good season.
Yeah, exactly. And Otto Porter Jr. was the product of that. The Wizards absolutely, for whatever reason, loved this guy and threw so much money at him. And just like the case study of like what happens when you do that is you just handicap your franchise for years. The Wizards were just in this territory of 8 seed, 9 seed, 10 seed, 7 seed at times maybe, and they were just locked into these awful contracts. But you know, the guy redeemed himself and went out to the Bay Area, and I totally, when I saw the signing that summer, I still remember thinking like, wow, the Warriors are desperate.
And like, this isn't gonna make a difference. Yeah.
And Porter Jr. was a huge piece of that playoff run.
He helps, like, yeah. He wasn't a starter, he didn't get huge minutes, but he contributed. He was in that rotation, and he gave them something they needed to help them win.
Yeah, so I'll just always remember Otto Porter Jr. because he was just one of those guys that just like was just always a bullet point in the storylines of the NBA seasons. And more so with that title with the Warriors. Like, I was just, what the heck? This guy is, like, making a difference here.
We'll never forget him in the Poeltl guessing game, too.
That's right.
He stumped us.
He did. You got anything else on Porter Jr., Sean?
No, I mean, I just think, he'll be one of those guys that, like, 20 years from now or 30 years from now when we have kids and they ask us about basketball and like we just bring up a random guy named Otto Porter Jr., like they'll be like, how the hell do you remember a guy like that? Like, he was nothing. He averaged 10 points a game. Like, how do you even remember that? And we'll just smile because we know way too much about this man.
Yeah. Here's a game for you, Otto Porter Jr. That kind of like sort of reminds me, or like is gonna stand out to me. It's just let's see, we're so 6 points and 6 points, one rebound, 66% from the field, 66% from three. Hitting some clutch threes in a game six against that Boston team, game seven with Warriors in Boston. Like,
wow,
You know, it's just like, it's not impressive numbers, but when you watch the game, it's like, oh man, the Warriors don't win that game potentially without that shot at that moment.
Oh yeah, right. No, he made the impact, man. Like, yeah. it's these role players that sometimes play the biggest role. It's like Bruce Brown on the Nuggets, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and wow. It was game six, my bad. Not game yeah, seven, okay. Game six.
Yeah, thank you, Otto Porter.
Yeah, and that's... Actually, the reason he was able to do that is because he started that game.
Oh, man. Good memory.
Yeah.
I did not remember that.
Steve Kerr made the last-minute switch to put Otto Porter Jr. into the starting lineup. So, you know, Steve Kerr, shout-out to Steve Kerr for using those chess pieces as well. But let's go to sinking teams. your boys, the Clippers, 5-5 in their last 10. And we talked about the Timberwolves versus Clipper game, but that was a bad loss from the Clippers' perspective. Big win for the Timberwolves, but yeah, I mean, up by 22 in the second quarter, I believe, and and I turned off the TV. I was like, okay, the Clippers got this. There's no Towns here.
You can never count the team that's playing the Clippers out. You can never count them out. We will always find a way to make it a game. And this wasn't the only game that we were up big and lost in this stretch here. We've lost multiple leads of double digits, and that's concerning for a team that has championship contention hopes and aspirations. If you can't be clutch, like, and you have like three very, very solid star players on your team, and you can't be the better clutch team in a lot of these situations, that's super concerning. Mm-hmm. You get into the playoffs, all these games are going to be close, and you're telling me that you're just going to go cold? And speaking of cold, Paul George, oh my gosh. I just waver on this guy every year. The fact that SGA is like the second best player in the league and we're still stuck with Paul George and not a title, not even a conference finals appearance to show for it. It's just a continuing like salt in the wound here, especially when he's averaging 18 points a game in the month of February on 41% shooting. Those are Jordan Poole numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, here's a controversial question for you, Sean. Is SGA now better than Paul George has ever been as a Clipper?
Yes.
I think
he is, because, I mean, my argument before, and I think you asked this like early on in the season, said, no, Paul George is still better because he finished top three in MVP voting once. Well, now Shea's going to finish number two in MVP voting. So, yeah, Shea is better than Paul George has ever been.
Well, Yeah, that my question. Yeah, I remember asking you that, and that was, mm-hmm. Is SGA better than Paul George ever was? But it sounds like you're saying yes, and you're saying and as a Clipper.
Yeah, I said to both now, because, I mean, I think his best years were at OKC still. I don't think he's played that well for us, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a few good games, but, like, playoffs, like, where have you been? I think that SGA is the better player career-wise at this point.
Yeah.
Especially because he's so young still, and he already has a second overall MVP vote. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. To be fair, though, I don't know if anybody saw SGA being this good. I think everybody thought he'd be a good player. But
not, yeah, this is ridiculous. Top two. Yeah.
Top two in
this
MVP.
This shatters any expectation of what his ceiling was going to be. But, yeah, for the Clippers, I mean, it sucks. Like, they go through stretches like this. Their guys are older. They might be tired at the end of the year. Maybe they're trying. Like, I know that like Paul George and Kawhi are both going to sit out tomorrow's game. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way they're playing back-to-backs anymore. And maybe James Harden even is going to at this point. But once it gets to the playoffs, like, man, as long as Kawhi is healthy, I'm giving us a chance in any series, because I saw what he did against the Phoenix Suns last year by himself, basically. I know he has it in him still. Like, if he's in the game and he's fully healthy, like, we have a chance against anybody still. So that's really the only hope I can cling on to at this point.
Yeah, I'm still sad about that. I really thought the Clippers were going to win that series against
the
Suns. Oh,
man, it would have been so awesome. Westbrook was playing so good.
Yeah, and that's the other piece too, right? It's Westbrook being out. Like,
he's supposed to come back before the end of the regular season, but hopefully he's been able to keep himself in decent shape. I mean, you can still at least, like, do some cardio with a broken hand, or maybe shoot with your offhand. But, yeah, that'll be a question mark for sure.
Yeah, the Toronto Raptors losing five in a row, firmly 12th in the East. They lose Jacob Poeltl. They lost Scottie Barnes. But they've got a scrappy team. I'm trying to – we were literally just talking about a win that they just got, and it's completely left my brain now. but, yeah, a very, very, very
– it's an unfortunate season for this team, right? Because – I mean, you come into it, like, you kept all your guys. You kept Siakam. You kept OG. All for it to just kind of, you know, all go away at the trade deadline. And now you're looking at just trying to tank for a draft pick. And, I mean, I don't know which win you're referring to, Alan. It must have been a long time ago because their last win was against the Hornets 2 weeks ago.
I was going to say it actually didn't result in a win. But it just stood out to me because it's just like, this team is one of those teams that's just like just set up for failure because these guys are actually going out there firing on all cylinders. I mean, mm-hmm. Emmanuel Quigley, 21 points, 18 assists in that game against the Suns.
Gary Trent Jr., 30 points.
Yeah, 36 minutes, and RJ Barrett, 23-4 and 2, you know, 37 minutes. Like this team is just leaning hard on their somewhat average and a little slightly above NBA player, or like above average NBA players in Barrett and
you gotta try, right? Like, someone's gotta score the points when you have no stars, and since Scottie Barnes has been out, he really was their only option. The rest of these guys are role players at best, and now they're just trying out a bunch of young dudes. They just lost to the Pistons tonight. I'm kind of glad they did because they got the Pistons out of that last seed. But I mean, you're playing guys like Kelly Olynyk, big minutes. You're playing Ochai Agbaji in your starting lineup. You're playing some guy named Jamius Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're just throwing in G League guys at this point, and maybe not as bad as like the Memphis Grizzlies are doing, where they're just playing like a different set of guys like every night. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's I mean, they're doing what they want to do right now. I think is just losing as many games as they can. But yeah, it sucks that they had to have this happen to them.
I would say like a bright spot for the Raptors though is that they've managed to really get the best out of Emmanuel Quigley and RJ Barrett. Like, it's night and day for Emmanuel Quigley. He's 18 points a game, 40% from three. 42 field goal percentage is a little rough, but
he's going to turn into a very good NBA player.
Yeah, 18-6 and 4 from versus his. I mean, in the Knicks, he was essentially just a spark plug off the bench, but here with the Raptors, he's really solidifying himself as a good NBA player.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of these guys just need the opportunity; they just never really get it. So it's cool to see Quickly get this. The other unfortunate thing for the Raptors is that unless they get, I can't remember what the protections are. It might be top five. Unless they get the top five pick, the Spurs get their draft pick in the Jakob Poeltl trade, which is just ridiculous that they gave up a first round pick to get him. And now they're going to give them like a super good lottery pick. So the Spurs are potentially going to have two picks in the top 10 here. In the draft because of the Raptors tanking so bad.
Well done. Well done, Spurs.
Yeah.
The Sixers, this is a team we probably should talk about because we talked about them last time. Is like, you know, this is a team we were worried about that like could really just free fall. And here they are. I think they're kind of free falling now. They've lost five of the last six, two losses to the Knicks scoring less than 80 points, and now they less find themselves in the seventh seed and no timetable yet for Joel Embiid, and in the seventh seed with only a half game lead on the Miami Heat. I mean, it's looking very real that they could fall to eighth. I mean, the only thing saving them is the fact that Miami has also lost four in a row and they're 5-5.
Yeah, we should have included them on here too.
But, the 76ers are really just slowly starting to fall into irrelevance here in terms of, I mean, for sure out of contention, but complete irrelevance is also possible here.
Yeah, I think the only saving grace for them is that the Bulls are so far behind in the nine spot that there's really no chance that they fall into the lower bracket of the play-in. But even so, I mean, this team has no chance without Joel Embiid. But Yeah, at this point, it's hard to know if it's even worth it for him to try to rush and return, because if there's not even, like, if he's not even, like, close to returning yet, and he tries to come back too early and injures himself again, maybe even worse this time, like, it's just not worth it, in my opinion. Like, you got to cut your losses here. Like, this team is really not meant to win right now anyways. Like, you have Tyrese Maxey there, sure, but after that, your best player is Tobias Harris, mm-hmm. you know, maybe Buddy Hield. Like, it's just, they don't have the firepower to contend with the Bucks and the Celtics right now. And with an Embiid that's not even fully healthy, like, it just doesn't change your odds enough to, I think, for it to be worth it. So I might shut it down at this point.
Yeah, it'd be a grueling way to come back. I mean, if he comes back the last week and then you got to play the Miami Heat in a play-in game. Mm-hmm. I think the Miami Heat beats you up, and then you go to a second game between the Bulls or the Hawks. I think you win that one. Yeah, you win that one, but then guess what you're gifted with is a first-round series against the Celtics. That's going to be a tough, tough series.
Right. Yeah, it just doesn't seem worth it, man. Mm-mm. I don't know. Like, I think Embiid is such a competitor that ultimately he is going to try to come back, but... Yeah, it just seems futile for this team. It's unfortunate, but, you know, it's just not their year.
Yeah, exactly. Tough one. But best performances of the week, let's go through these. DeMar DeRozan, 44 minutes, 46 points, two steals and a block in overtime against the Pacers. Man, DeMar DeRozan still has it. And
I know.
I wonder how many of these guys actually want the play-in tournament to happen. Like the Bulls and the Hawks, like, do they even care about the play-in tournament at all?
I think the Bulls really do care about this thing. They've been playing hard all year. They never traded away their pieces like the Raptors did. Like, they probably should have traded Zach LaVine. They probably even compete even more if they actually had a player that could play in his place, you know? Like,
exactly.
Like, why do they still have Zach LaVine on this team? Clearly, you don't need him that bad. But, yeah. It is crazy to see DeMar still put up huge numbers like this. And one of his shots in this game was the shot that sent it to overtime, was a fadeaway baseline jumper, his patented long two-point shot that just went in. Yeah, I think there was only like 2 seconds left on the clock, and he drains it, and they send it to OT, and he just cleans up there too. And it's just like, man, like, it's so crazy these old guys can still put up performances like this. Like, it's not just LeBron. It's not just Steph. It's not just KD. Like, guys like DeMar DeRozan are still getting it done, just less so. You don't see it as often because he's on the Bulls. His game isn't as flashy. He's not really as good as these other guys have been in their careers. But these numbers are just ridiculous.
Yeah. Here's something else while I was scouring these Chicago Bulls box scores. Andre Drummond is still in the league, and he's averaging 15 minutes a game off this Bulls team.
Dude, talk about old funny guys. When the Bulls played against the Timberwolves twice this year, they started Andre Drummond in both those games alongside Vucevic to match up against Kat and Gobert, and he actually had really good games against them.
Wow.
Yeah, he averaged like 15 rebounds in those games, like 20 points. Like, he was still out there doing his thing, his Andre Drummond thing.
Oh my gosh. This is another name that you were excited about, Sean, is Josh Hart. 39 yes. minutes, 20, 19, and 10, triple double in a win against the Sixers. I mean, hey, the Knicks are up there, man. They're doing their thing. They don't have any Randall. Dude. They traded away quickly. They're
OG the just came
seed.
Back.
Yeah. Oh, they lost OG for like almost a month.
Over a month. Mitchell Robinson's been out for most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But their next man up is just always able to fill in. Like, you'd think at some point, like, they got rid of Grimes, they got rid of Quickley, they got rid of Barrett. How do they still have the depth to cover? Like, I don't understand it, but you got guys like Josh Hart, who's, by the way, he's averaging like 43 minutes a game over the last month, which is just so stupid and classic Tom Thibodeau. but he somehow stayed healthy this whole time, and he's able to put up a stat line like this against a Sixers team that they held to 79 points two games in a row. Unfortunately, one of those games they scored less points than 79, so they actually lost that one. But the next game they came out and won like 106-79, and it's just crazy that like Josh Hart's been playing this well. Their defense is just insane. And now that OG's back, it's even better. And I can't imagine it gets any worse if Mitchell Robinson's able to return later this year also.
Yeah.
So, man, this is going to be a fun team to follow because they're not going to be an easy out for any team, regardless of who they're playing in the first or the second round. Like, they proved last year, like, they made it past the Cavs in the first round super easily. You got guys like Josh Hart playing like this. Add an OG to that mix. It's, like, these are going to be attrition battles. Like, they might rarely get over 100 points in the playoffs.
Yeah, just
but that's how they want to play. Yeah, just punishing.
Tom Thibodeau must be like the world's greatest motivational speaker, or like, because I mean, I'm sure he's a great basketball tactician, no doubt about that. But so much of his the effort that he gets from some of these players, it's just absurd. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because this isn't just a one-off performance for Josh Hart. Like, he's actually been playing really well for like a good few weeks here.
Yeah,
guys like Dante DiVincenzo, like having crazy games, like Miles McBride, I think his name is, some random backup point guard. Throw him in the lineup, he plays well too.
Everybody's playing well except for the guy that you traded for, Alec Burks. Doesn't even see the floor.
I don't know about that trade. I'm not really sure why they they did that. They didn't really give up anything, but I think that was more for Bogdanovich maybe.
Yeah, where is Bogdanovich?
He plays. Yeah, he's playing. Yeah, not a lot. I think he plays like 20 minutes a game, but he's there.
These Alec Burks and Bogdanovich just feel like the type of trades that the GM made out of spite of, you know, not in spite, but like I just cannot see Tom Thibodeau wanting these guys. And clearly
Bogdanovich is a terrible defender.
Yeah, and these guys are not hustlers. Like Bogdanovich, I think, plays hard, but...
Yeah.
He's just a dude who's
slow,
offensive-minded guy who shoots the ball reliable. Well.
Right, yeah. Not really Thibodeau's style, but they just moved off Evan Fournier's contract. I guess that was really the only thing they did with that.
Yeah. Other guy, Anthony Davis, 27, 25, 5, and 7, in a three blocks in the huge win against the Wolves. I mean, the Lakers are getting these wins, but then they're also just following it up with just, like, bad losses.
These opponents are hard, man. These are hard games. Like, every one of their opponents they've played recently, I feel like, has been a tough matchup.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it makes sense that they lose a few, but I mean, when Anthony Davis plays like this, you will not lose, that's for damn sure.
Well, that's one of my points I was gonna make, is that Anthony Davis and LeBron have been on the floor, and yet all the Lakers can really produce right now is a 9 seed team, 36 and 31.
That was a big improvement from the beginning of the season, though. I mean, they started off with a losing record similar to last year, and they put it together. So yeah, losing to the Kings, like, that's not a bad loss, you know. Ever since the start of March, they've had a rough schedule. Denver, OKC, Sacramento, Milwaukee, Minnesota, and then Sacramento again. And now Golden State on Saturday. That's a crazy stretch right there of teams to play.
Yeah.
They get a little bit of a respite against some weaker Eastern Conference teams after that. But yeah, I mean, for them to have gone 3-3 in that gauntlet, and then, you know, can come out of it with a winning record if they beat the Warriors on Saturday, I'd consider that a win.
Yeah.
Because their schedule softens up a bunch from here on out. Like, Hawks, Sixers, Pacers, Bucks, Memphis, Pacers, Nets, Raptors, Wizards. And they really don't have a lot of tough games left. They're all very winnable. So...
Tough
few against the Bucks and maybe the Warriors too, but other than that, I think that they actually have a pretty good shot at least maintaining where they're at and maybe even getting up to the 8 seed, which obviously would be a huge deal for mm-hmm. them to be able to not have to fight through two play-in games to get a spot in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, that made me feel a lot better. Thanks for that, Sean.
yeah, I know I was causing you some anxiety, so I wanted to assuage your fears a bit.
Yeah, but a call-out for Anthony Davis, same as Zion. He's,
man, this stat line was so dumb, by the way. Yeah. What a dumb stat line.
But 63 games for Anthony Davis so far, and he's basically on pace to play just as many, or if not slightly more, than his 2017 season, where he played 75 games, which is kind of crazy for him. Since 2017, he has not played any more than 62 games, and he finally crossed that line with the Kings game at 63. And if he keeps on the same pace, he should get to 75.
Which I guess is disappointing in and of itself, that the Lakers record isn't better with Anthony Davis being so healthy this year.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess the good news for Anthony Davis is, like, surprisingly, like, Anthony Davis hasn't made an all-defensive team or all-NBA team since 2019, which I'm sure he's headed on his way to making an all-NBA defensive team this year.
Definitely.
DeAndre Ayton, 40 minutes, 15 and 20, 33 points, 19 rebounds. Domin Ayton finally comes out at a
Domin Ayton. He's here. He finally arrived just in time for nothing to matter for this Portland Trail Blazers team.
Yeah, exactly. What a beat up team of, like, just misfits here. You lose Shaden Sharp. Scoot Henderson is
Malcolm Brogdon.
And out. Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Grant is out, like, and Anfernee Simmons missed a few games.
Yeah, he missed a game, yeah.
But DeAndre Ayton taking advantage of that and just putting together a good dominating performance, I guess, for himself.
Yeah, they actually won this game, too, which is equally surprising that he put up a big stat line and actually contributed to a win. It wasn't just empty numbers, so... Yeah, he'll probably give us some really good numbers till the end of the year, and then next year he'll disappear again.
Yeah, he did have another 30-point bomb tonight, 31 and 14.
Oh my gosh, he followed it up. Knicks. Dang.
Yeah, and so DeAndre Ayton is here. He's finally in shape right as the season is about to end.
Right when it counts, He's only good when it gets the clutch time, you know?
So worst performances, Damian Lillard, 33 minutes, 2 for 12, 10, 5, and 6. We were just talking about how he had turned his numbers around since All-Star break.
No.
I think he's still hanging on, but this was not a good one here for Dame time.
Yeah, I'm happy to say that I feel like this is more of an outlier than a trend for him. Like, he had been having some really good games, and he had an okay game tonight in their win tonight, so... it sucks that he's still capable of putting up poor performances like this. Mm-hmm. But, I think it's just Damian Lillard in his old age. I guess he can't just be as consistent as he was before.
Yeah. Tobias Harris, 26 minutes, 1 for 6.
Ugh. What's happened to this man?
It's getting old, man.
We're probably the number one fans of Tobias Harris in the entire world.
Yeah.
I obviously have huge love for him from his Clipper days when he was pulling our scrappy asses to an 8 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you love him for fantasy reasons, too. You had him on some of your fantasy teams.
Oh, yeah.
He was a steady 20-point contributor every game.
Oh, yeah. Huge value pick. But, dude's getting old. He's 31 now, Tobias Harris. He's got that big contract of, obviously, every year it seems like the 76ers want to think about how to offload that. But
yeah, and they never did.
Never did. Yeah. Still hanging on.
Yeah, but we've always been a fan of him, too, and believed in him and that he could still be that, like, big contributing player to a championship team. But lately it has not seemed like that. Lately it does seem like he's fallen off. Maybe it's just a big slump. But, yeah, this is a very embarrassing performance for him. I'm sure this is one he wants to forget.
Yeah, I look forward to when Tobias Harris becomes, like, the next Otto Porter Jr. Or, like, it's just a
dude,
huge
he totally could
maker.
Be. Yeah, he could be, like, a 20 minutes off the bench, 10 points a game type of guy for you.
For a huge playoff team? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because now his big contract's over, there's going to be a team that's interested in still bringing him in for cheap. And he'll take it because I think he does want to win a title still. So, yeah, that does seem like the most likely role for him.
Yeah, The next guy here, Anthony Black. I had to look him up to see who this guy was, but now I remember him. Dude with the hair.
The dude with the hair.
0-for-5, 0 points, 2 rebounds in 23 minutes. Oh, yeah. Talk about productive for Anthony Black.
Which is a shame. I mean, this was a guy that had a lot of hype coming into his rookie year this year. Number 6 overall pick, I believe, to the Magic, and had a chance to be the starting point guard for this team for a good stretch here after Markel Fultz got injured early in the season. And he actually started a good amount of games for this team. And recently it just seems like he's really fallen into some sort of regression. And now he's not even really in the main rotation. Gary Harris has taken his spot, which, you know, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because you got Markel Fultz back now. You got Cole Anthony along with Suggs and Harris. That's your four guard lineup right there, rotation. And Anthony Black, really, he only gets minutes when one of those guys sits at this point. And that's your lottery pick kind of going to waste right there. It's unfortunate, which, you know, maybe he can make a resurgence in his sophomore or his third year, but I'd say this is a pretty big bust so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's still he's still a young guy, but it's tough. I don't know. The land of Orlando Magic has not been known to produce. I mean, it took them getting a guy who was probably one of the most NBA ready guys we've seen recently.
And Banchero.
And Banchero to actually like get anything productive out of their young guards. Like Suggs has kind of had a slightly better year than last year, but
Suggs is probably one of the better defending guards in the league right now. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him that.
Yeah. I think there's still more of a ceiling to unlock for that guy, but I don't know if he'll do it in Orlando, but maybe. I mean, this Orlando team, though, we got to give them respect. They're a respectable playoff team today.
They are. No, they've been winning a lot of games. Yeah, this loss to the Knicks was actually an outlier in how their records has been lately because their defense has been on point. They've had a pretty soft schedule, and I think that's helped them out too. But they took advantage of it. Banchero's been balling. Franz Wagner's back for them. Markel Fultz is back for them. So, yeah, they're pretty. And Jonathan Isaac still, you know, he's able to play like 20 minutes a game. I think he got up to 20 minutes a game finally, which, you know, he's creeping his way up there. Maybe he'll hit 25 by the time the playoffs start. This team will be fun to watch, but I feel like they could also just be a very easy first round defeat for a better team like, say, the Knicks. If they play against the Knicks in the first round, I think the Knicks will just kind of handily destroy them.
That might be one of the worst NBA series to watch.
The scores are going to be like 86 to like 81.
Exactly. I just looked up the Magic because I was just curious where they were now. But yeah, they're fourth defensively and 23rd offensively in the league. So I don't know what – I think the Knicks are also top 10 defensively. But
they are, yeah.
Bottom 50 percentile in offense. We'll probably even further without Randall in the lineup.
Yeah.
So that will be one heck of a slow and boring
Like, looking at the box score will be fascinating just to be like, how did these teams only score 80 points? Yes. But watching the game itself, like, you'd have to be a pretty big sicko – like super into just gritty defensive games, you know, which I think we have an appreciation for. We love that old grit and grind Memphis Grizzlies team.
One of my favorite teams of all time.
Yep, very reminiscent of that. So you might actually find some enjoyment out of watching that series yourself, Alan.
I think so. Now that you put it that way, yeah. See Randall in the post, beating it up inside, and Banchero as well. I think it'd be fun, him. Yeah, I think it'd be a fun matchup.
Yeah.
To watch.
This might low-key, maybe this would be your favorite first round series. I'm gonna call it now. It actually looks pretty likely to happen. They're both pretty firmly in the 4-5 seed right now.
I might be the only viewer.
I mean, you might be. Yeah, you might... and Spike Lee. You and Spike Lee will be enjoying that.
Yeah, exactly. Final thoughts here to close the podcast off is shout out to Tyrese Jackson Davis, moisturizing Victor Wembanyama for the best dunk on Wemby yet, maybe ever. He might never ever let this happen to him again. But Tyrese Jackson Davis, you know, proving that Wemby is human and this, and, you know, also putting himself on the spotlight. That might have been the biggest moment of his NBA career. Or
that was a sick poster. So if that is his best moment of his career, I wouldn't be too upset with that.
Yeah, or it could be a catapult to seeing a little more, seeing more often of this kid. But just had to shout that out because I think that was the best highlight of the week.
Oh, yeah, definitely best highlight of the week. Wemby took it well, though, too. He took it very humbly, which, you know, he does with everything. He's just like, yeah, like, you know, that happens. I dunk on a lot of people. People are going to dunk on me.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, cool, man. Like, exactly. Very mature for a 19-year-old kid. But, yeah, Tyrese Jackson Davis, he's making a name for himself a little bit. He's carved his way into the rotation on the Warriors, and I'm sure he'll have to play a pivotal role if they're going to do anything in the playoffs because, you know, Kevon Looney is just MIA. So he's going to have to be the new Kevon Looney.
Yeah, for the Jumpstart Warriors, this new team that has just kind of revitalized itself in the second half. With a total new set of characters.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, thanks everybody for tuning in. That's all we got, and don't forget to check us out week over week.
Yes, sir. Have a good week, everybody.